the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Memorial Day. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And, of course, Memorial Day, not the kind of Memorial Day we are used to appreciating and recognizing. Yeah, certainly in our little, hamlet here in the, I can't even say the foothills of the Adirondacks, because we're sort of nicely nestled between the White Mountains and the Adirondacks, between Vermont and New York. But as I've detailed many times, this is a village that loves a parade. Last night at some point, I said to Tina, I said, "Boy, there's not going to be a parade." For years I've laughed about the parades, about how there's, for a village of 2,000 people to have about 11 parades a year, a little over the top, but I'm going to miss it today for sure. One of the real pleasures, actually, thinking about it. About 15 minutes before, it usually starts at about 5 o'clock, and you go out at 4:40 and sit on the stoop, and they come right on by, the fire equipment, the veterans, all the accoutrement, the little league teams. That's my favorite. The little league teams, they're like amoebas bouncing all over the street. And one of the great traditions is they've got bags of candy, and they throw candy on your lawn. And you're finding pieces of swell and double bubble for weeks, and Jolly Ranchers. You can grow a Jolly Rancher tree in your front lawn. Well, I'm making light, but of course, honoring just all the men and women that gave their lives. I put up a picture this morning of Cave Hill in Louisville. And for those that are going to get at some point a chance to visit Louisville for Derby and anything else, Cave Hill National Cemetery. There's big swaths for military. And it's moving. And one of the most incredible memorial parks in all of America. So, thinking today, and given that it's going to be a subdued Memorial Day across the country, makes it that much more poignant for everybody to think about those that gave their lives. We had a terrific weekend of racing. We're going to hit on a bunch of things today with an eye toward the Monday holiday racing, and given where we are as racetracks start adding in to the jurisdiction landscape, we've got quite a bit today. And of course, Santa Anita being the real major focus, with Grade One action. Looking forward to looking at these races. The Shoemaker came up very good, as did the Gamely. And you've also got the companion turf sprint, the Monrovia, which offers the male counterpart to Saturday's Daytona. And in fact, just on that topic, I'm going to talk to Doug O'Neill at the end of the show. You'll recall that Doug was really high on Wild Man Jack, and this is a serious horse on the turf sprint scene. The whole weekend offered, you know, one either returnee. That's a big subplot, I thought, to everything we saw, particularly on Saturday. The five stakes at Churchill. I mean, obviously we had the two graded stakes with the Whittingham, which was, for a smallish field, ended up with quite a bit of action, including the kind of ticky-tack takedown of Rock Emperor. I think, you know, we'll discuss that at some point. But between Maxfield's performance and the Matt win, and we'll talk to Brendan Walsh in hour two, Maxfield's comeback, that was just one of four. Amazingly, and in fact, Andy Serling and I last night, I was talking to Andy, and I said, you know, tomorrow, Andy will be with us tomorrow, of course, and you got more Fox coverage today, America's Day at the Racing, America Day at the Races, and here's the four winners of the stakes at Churchill on Saturday, starting with Dunbar Road, and in fact then followed up immediately by Sharing. The two of them were gone 200 days. So 7 months, essentially, coming out of Breeders' Cups. And Dunbar Road ran terrific and had, you know, had some things to deal with. And Maxfield, who we'll obviously get to. But Dunbar Road, 203 days off. Sharing, 204 days off. And I thought it was just tremendous. Graham Motion will join us near the top of hour three and talk about the Spitestown filly, who, you know, there was a certain point, kind of watched, and if you're keeping an eye on her in particular, Alms took all the money, and which I thought that was a little strange, just because of, you know, the 14 hole, and it seemed like Alms had the trickier of the assignments in a 14, what ended up being a 13 horse field after a scratch. And Sharing, Manny Franco doing a nice job and having her in prime position, wasn't afraid to lose ground, being a little bit wide, and just, you know, just a terrific comeback. And we'll get Graham's thoughts. Dunbar, you know, waited and came with her run. Owendale away since the end of November and made it three in a row in terms of comebackers making a successful return. The Clark winner couldn't have made it more exciting with the late move. We've gotten used to Florent Giroux going forward. Owendale, not a horse that you're necessarily going forward with. 176 days away for him, and that got us to Maxfield. 231 days on the sidelines. And, of course, forced to miss the Breeders' Cup and patience and everything we talked about going into the weekend when it came to what appeared to be a high confidence level from Brendan Walsh and every reason to be confident. And Maxfield's effort, after breaking well, everybody was so worried about him breaking and so forth. Despite breaking well, ended up kind of in a scrum, shuffled back, and allowed to settle by Jose Ortiz, who obviously wanted to be involved, and you know, that was one of the, you know, the elements of your decision making on Maxfield. And it just, after the gate work, which we talked about quite a bit on Friday going in, Maxfield, I thought, acquitted himself just fabulously. You know, he's given away plenty of experience, only his third career start. and got to be very excited. Figure-wise, a 95 buyer, and from that, you know, from that evaluation method, a perfect launching point going forward. Very anxious to hear from Brendan about what the team at Godolphin and he are thinking about. How much time? How do you not, you know, give the Belmont, you know, heavy consideration? It just seems that I suppose the configuration. We'll ask Brendan. The one turn mile and an eighth. Does that factor in? Is that an issue for him? Terrific comeback performance from Max Field, and then the only horse that that wasn't coming off a lengthy layoff, Smooth Like Straight. We're going to talk to Michael McCarthy. Michael seemingly hitting on all cylinders. We'll catch up with him. Comes out of the Pasadena. I mean, there was a layoff line at the end of February, but not to the extent that everybody else previously in the stakes had fashioned. And Smooth Like Straight, just 84 days. So almost a 90-day layoff, just shy of 90 days. It was a fun afternoon, I thought, at Churchill. I was really focused there. You know, kept an eye, obviously, on what was going on at Santa Anita as well. Friday, too, we should mention. I thought Friday was a great lead-in to the weekend. Two-year-olds are starting to come with regularity. Let me give you the lineup, actually, and tell you everything going on. Marcus Hirsch is going to join us, actually, after the first break, and we'll do some news before anything. I'll probably touch on some racing stuff with Marcus, too, but the situation in Illinois needs to be addressed, and you need to hear what the details were of the Illinois Racing Board meeting and the very contentious discussion and Q&A that went on with the IRB and Tony Petrillo of Arlington. It is very precarious, and Marcus, of course, has followed everything that goes on in Chicagoland, and we'll let him flesh that out. I told you, Michael McCarthy, Nick Tamaro. It is a Monday holiday, so you get your fresh dose of Nick for handicapping. We're going to look at the pick five, let Nick carry you through the pick five. We'll also do some recap, get his thoughts particularly about the Churchill action. And Brendan Walsh, Graham Motion. We're going to have a Breeders' Cup session probably at about 11:15. We'll call it a surprise guest because there is TV today, 6 o'clock NBC for the Shoemaker Mile. And here's my Santa Anita. Let's take a peek, actually, and see what the Shoemaker goes off at. Boy, 7:38. That's interesting. All right, because it said 6 o'clock, and I wonder. I have to check that. I mean, that can't be, can it? I guess so. 7:38. So they got they're going to go till 8 o'clock, a 2-hour broadcast. All right, we'll find out. We'll get the specifics because it said on the listings, 6 o'clock. All right. Well, it's going to be. I haven't told Dina yet. It's going to be a long, long day I think under that scenario because you've also got the Fox coverage all day of Churchill. So going to be a lot of there's going to be a lot of racing today. Yesterday, I kind of knowing in advance that this was going to happen, or anticipating, we went and took a drive, and we actually found between like, if you know the area, between Scaticoke and Melrose, there's a little tiny, it's a tiny little town called Melrose, just north of Troy. And we found this, we've seen the sign for years of this, in a garden center, off to the left, and we've never gone. We've driven by it, when I tell you, 1,000 times. So we drove past it, and she said, "Want to go down there? Let's go look at that." Okay. So we turned around, actually. We went down there and find this enormous, sizable farm. Huge spread, and they had gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. So even though we thought we've done all the yard work that we're going to do, and flower, Bettina's been amazing. We still bought more. So we got another hanging basket, and I got they had something really cool. They had these herb baskets, these herb, but like a little like a planter bowl, and they had all combinations of herbs. I've got rosemary and chives every year, but this was really neat. It had like basil, and what else is in there? There's scallions. There's, I don't know, like 5 different things. And then a bowl of lettuce, same kind of thing, with like 4 different kinds of lettuces growing in it. Yeah. And a tomato. Had to get a tomato plant. So. And I did paint yesterday. I had to do some painting. I'm up on the ladder, risking life and limb. Because that's not my, not a great painter, got to admit. But this was easy because it's the side porch facing, needed a touch up. So yesterday was the house and home dedication of the 3-day weekend. Back to the racing again today. Had a good day Saturday. Hope you did well. Got beaten at McCarthy's horse. Beat us in that nightcap on Saturday. He was one of several. That was a tricky race, and the race unfolded strangely a little bit with the two horses going out and essentially dueling each other into submission. Not each other though, because Smooth Like Straight kept on going. Island Commish with Paco Lopez. It's not hard to. Not hard to goad Paco into a speed duel. Yeah, you just drop a hat and then you'll get Paco to go. We'll take a break. Got a nice full morning. It's Memorial Day 2020, Sirius XM at the races. Got to talk about the Keeneland 5-day meet as well. They asked for formal approval of those dates that we suggested in July. Back after this, Marcus Hirsch starts us off.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing 2-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Yeah. Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes plus into hour one on Memorial Day, and not sure if we can assign right or wrong regarding the situation in Illinois, but here's Marcus Hirsch to join us, and Marcus spent a good portion of Friday live tweeting the IRB meeting. Marcus, good morning.
Much to the consternation of anyone unfortunate enough to duck follow me on Twitter. Good morning.
Well, good morning. It was important, and you know, this with all the other topics, Marcus, that you know, have been, you know, challenging the industry nationwide, worldwide. The Illinois scenario, you know, was sort of under the radar. Now it's really front and center with most of the rest of the country. We're still waiting for Pennsylvania and Maryland to sort things out. But the situation, and Iowa too, that's right, Prairie Meadows situation. Well, this is alarming, though, because this does not seem to have prospects for resolution on any kind of timely basis.
Well, to lay out the groundwork of the situation, Illinois is one of the slower states to be relaxing coronavirus pandemic protocols come from the governor's office and, you know, Cook County, and then even more particularly Chicago, which doesn't affect Hawthorne or Arlington because they're not in Chicago. But just speaking of the tightening rings of restrictions are even more restrictive in what's permissible. So there's that influencing the slowness of getting things back on track. Hawthorne was conducting a standard meet when they were forced to cease operations. But Arlington obviously hadn't begun accepting horses, and so they have not opened their stables yet. And so there are like a handful of thoroughbreds at Hawthorne who spent the winter there. Most, you know, even year-round Illinois horse people didn't spend the winter in Chicago this year because there was no winter spring Hawthorne meet as they were readying their facility for full-on casino construction, and they said that would inhibit thoroughbred training in a way it wouldn't impact having harness horses around or shipping in. So that's why they didn't have a thoroughbred meet, did conduct a standardbred meet, and that's why more Chicago horse people shipped out for the winter than would have been standard. So, yeah, everything is in limbo right now. Arlington says that they have people, health officials have expressed concerns even about horses and the human caregiver population accompanying them coming back to the stables from so many disparate areas into one small space. And they said, they testified at this Illinois Race Board meeting on Friday that they had submitted proposals across the board, state, county, local, municipality, for conducting a racing season. But the big kicker there is their proposals that they submitted involved racing with spectators.
Right.
And we don't, as far as I know, no one has even come close to broaching that possibility in North America yet, much less saying that's their racing season, you know, hinges upon having spectators. There's testimony at this meeting that it was not financially viable for the track to conduct a spectator-free meet. You can see where the dynamic is different here because there's not a subsidy for making purse money the way there is in most jurisdictions, like California excluded, but handle there is so much bigger than here. So they get a little supplemental money from the Department of Agriculture in the form of Illinois Owners Awards, which are very likely to not be funded at the same level, if at all, given the budgetary constraints of the Illinois state government right now. But it's not like there's a revenue stream that, I mean, I know that spigot has been turned off because of casino closures since things shut down in March and early April, whatever. And so all tracks are faced with a different revenue structure, but they had past money accumulated and the assumption that will be turned back, at least to some extent, whereas in Chicago, whatever money, the purse money is going to be derived from betting, and, you know, the tracks get a pittance of a bet made out of state, you know, off track, you know, without fans, they're, Arlington itself makes a lot of money from its admissions and concessions, and they do get big crowds during the summer quite frequently on the more popular weekend days. And I would assume that their business model isn't to a great extent predicated on that, and it's going to be difficult for them to get to the place they need. So you can, in a way, understand where they would be coming from that's different than most jurisdictions in North America.
Wow.
You want me to give you the other side of that? I mean,
yes.
If you don't, even if you have to scrap together some sort of compromise to meet with purse levels no one's happy about, and a situation that's far, far, far from ideal. I mean, the idea is that you continue to keep the circuit going so that you have a racing product, so that you still have a group of horsemen who are going to inhabit the circuit and make it go and be the dynamic for future seasons. And I think the concern is that there is not that doesn't seem to be part of their approach. And I'm not running a business, and Arlington, everyone knows they're owned by CDI. CDI, you know, has tried their principle, like all corporations, is to maximize shareholder value. So in a business sense, I mean, where things stand right now with them is that idea of scraping together some sort of product to proliferate racing community in this venue, is that high up on their list of important values within that corporate structure? And I don't know the answer to that, but people can draw their own conclusions.
Well, the meeting also included ITHA with the statement from David McCauley and
McCaffrey.
Excuse me, McCauley's the IRB proxy.
The ITHA,
over the years, they've got to be just exasperated. Marcus, and I don't know how they muster at this point, the energy to fight this. It's just been one disheartening, situation after another for over a decade. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Well, yes, I would probably put on that and say, like, Illinois Horsemen, necessarily assigned
right.
an organizing umbrella, because, I mean, I respect a lot of things that the Horsemen's group does, and it's an important thing to have going. But, I mean, they have been a major combatant, too. You know, I don't know if racing as a hazard or that
Marcus, we're having a little phone, little garbled. Lost you there for a minute.
It may be a bad connection. Anyway, I just was going to say they've been right in there fighting, and like maybe fighting too much with the racetrack. It's just been a constant battleground instead of people working together. And I know that that's easier said than done, but I just want to make it clear that, I mean, the ITHA or whatever Horseman's group, in the long view history of racing in Chicago, and is not completely blameless in this, what seems to be like an eternal struggle, and not in a good way, between the different participants. What happened was, another important element to what's going on is that there is no contract right now between Arlington and the ITHA, and a contract is required between the representative horsemen's group and a racetrack to conduct a meet. That does not exist at the moment, and they reached a point where there was Illinois Racing Board mandated mediation. I believe they had a couple of mediated sessions that were not fruitful at all. And here, again, there's a problem with even having negotiations, because you don't know what you're negotiating over to some extent, because of the singular situation we find ourselves in generally. Mm. There's been no betting in Illinois since all the OTBs shut down. I mean, the OTBs and simulcast wagering, that's a big purse generator through the whole course of the year. So without knowing when things are going to reopen, I mean, sure, you can game plan different scenarios and try to operate from there, but there has not been a firm footing for solid negotiation. That being said, I do think that, I mean, the impasse is pretty intense right now, and, that could change in a day, but just as a practical matter, there is no contract for the meet, so they can't have a meet until that's resolved.
I know in your story you had quotes from Mike Campbell, and wondering if you had any other feedback from other horsemen, and you mentioned the situation in Iowa too, certainly that is another kind of a hot spot, to say the least. The meatpacking plants contributing mightily to the situation there. And from a landscape standpoint, Marcus, you and I talk regularly about Indiana, and did have Eric Hallstrom last week. You know, horsemen have to make decisions, and, you know, what do you foresee?
Well, listen, I mean, Canterbury's open, Indiana's open, Churchill's going strong, Ohio is opening. So if you're talking about, like, running for a peanuts at Arlington, who at this point, who's left to come? Can you get the critical mass of horses even into Chicago to conduct a meet? I mean, I think you can if your goal is to run 2 to 3 days a week with 7 races a day. And to use maximize instead of protecting the turf course, use it as your major asset, because that is one of the things they have going. And I do, the other dynamic in play there is that the Polytrack, you know, you've got a subset of the Midwest horse population that at this point has, like, synthetic preference identified, that race at Turfway or Presque Isle horses.
Right.
Woodbine. So, you know, maybe horses that people didn't think could be competitive at Woodbine, or, I mean, but really, to me, the only sure things I see for coming back are, like, the stalwarts of the people who have homes here and have been racing here for, you know, have deep roots in the racing community. And, I mean, Larry Rivelli's stable is the dominant force at Arlington. They would give him 1,000 stalls probably if he asked for them. They might have room too. But he's the guy that he's the engine that makes all the races go, for better or for worse. I don't know. I haven't talked to Larry. He's got to be super concerned. I mean, his Arlington is his bread and butter. The situation is, you know, I'm sure very difficult for him. I know, you know, like Chris Block and the Block family, that I know they're exploring their options. Chris is on the, he's a board member of the ITHA. And just to follow up on the meeting, the ITHA did, the board did come up with an official statement that the executive director McCaffrey read at the meeting. And they had they asked the board to demand 3 things of Arlington. One, to commit to running at least 30 days. Two, to do away with all open stakes races so the money could be dedicated to regular overnight purses. And three, to give a 30-day notice, have a 30-day period where the stables and all training facilities were open before the meet started. So those were their, they asked the board to require that of Arlington, but that was read into the record and then it wasn't even addressed again at the meeting. What the meeting ended up doing, Steve, just to summarize, is kick the can down the road. Thomas McCauley, the Oak Park attorney who you referenced earlier, he spoke more than anybody else at the meeting, to say nothing of the board itself. He has been taking a prominent position in the past, although he was strangely subdued at the April meeting for whatever reason. But he had some pretty strong lines of questioning for Arlington. And near the end of the meeting, he proposed also that the board could meet again before their regularly scheduled June 23rd or whatever it is meeting, because there's the hope that some OTBs will come online earlier than that, like around the 1st of June. So I guess the essence of it is, once there is more material to discuss, maybe they should meet quickly to wrap minds around what they're working with, instead of trying to figure out what they might be working with, which is where things kind of stand. But I mean, the real question is, and for whatever it's worth, it's like, there's this concept of dark host status. That means that if you're the host track, all the simulcast betting that goes on while there's not a live race meet, the dark host track, which is assigned at the dates awards meeting of the IRB, they get to collect most of the revenues from those simulcasts. So, if you're running a live meet, then you automatically get that status. But now we're in a weird situation where the track is running a live meet but not running races. So if Arlington is not going to commit to running this year, this summer, you know, there's going to be a movement to switch the dark host money starting immediately to Hawthorne, which has already committed to running a fall thoroughbred meet, even if it's not for very much money.
Mm. Wow. Well, this is, I mean, Marcus, what if you had to put odds on it, what's the line on their being racing at Arlington this year?
Can I go up to 138 points?
You are the critical. Yes, you are the critical analyst when it comes to the morning line numbers.
I will just say that my strike rate on those comments is roughly 99.999%. So if people think that I'm just taking shots, it's not that at all. The odds of Arlington running a race meet this year. Boy, I couldn't go any stronger than an even money proposition. I would say odds against.
Wow. I mean, it's inconceivable that you could look at a future without an Arlington Park. But that seems, Marcus, to be more and more a legitimate trial balloon that at some point there's not going to be an Arlington Park. There's not a Hollywood Park, so I guess it's
right.
Not outlandish.
That's a really good way
that there might.
It seems impossible until it's possible.
Exactly.
You know, I've been saying that. Who cares what I've been saying? But I mean, the feeling I've had for years is. Simultaneously, I am naturally a skeptical person, but I have maintained strange optimism about the way things would go here, just for whatever multiple reasons. But also simultaneously, I think that I've also tried to make the point in private and public conversations that I'm not sure people fully grasp how close to the brink the Illinois racing scene has been. A and B, and maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I feel like if, and I don't want to forget that Hawthorne has applied for a casino license, which Arlington declined to do when that became permissible last summer. So Hawthorne, you know, could be the standard bearer of Illinois racing. I don't know exactly what that means or what that looks like. But if you're talking about Arlington as being kind of the flagship track in one of the largest metropolitan areas in North America, and horse racing losing that foothold. I mean, maybe there's a lot of gnashing of teeth behind the scenes, but I haven't necessarily noticed a level of concern among racing authorities that I thought was commensurate with that possibility.
Well, that's what I came away. You know, I was watching your tweets and would go to your feed, you know, every, you know, half hour and catch up as it was unfolding. And then mm-hmm. you know, you wrote the piece later in the day. I just you could see, you know, the smolder of a brush fire that. It just seems bad.
It isn't really bad. I think it's sad. It's sad in a lot of ways. And you know, things, you just never know how history is going to unfold. I mean, you could, all kinds of little details along the way that have created the path that, this whole thing has traveled, and it's not gone the right way. It's not gone a good way if you are a racing person, and that goes for, like, in a very general sense, and specifically all the racing people around this area, you know, people that I've gotten to know over time. And it's, you know, it's every jurisdiction has its community, and that community is often populated with families and people who are invested in this in a very deep life sort of way, where it's not just their work, but kind of their a key plank in their very existence for generations. And those are pretty much, those are the stalwarts of the racing community. And There are plenty of those because Chicago racing history is so rich, and that's been, those roots have been withering for a long time, and now they're in danger of, like, they're not, the landscape being barren almost completely. I shouldn't say it that way because, I mean, you could see a world in which Hawthorne really stepped forward and had some pretty good racing and race meets. I mean, their facility obviously is nothing like Arlington. Their location is a much different, and I'm not condemning them for that. And right now, they're looking like the track that it's interested in racing. I mean, all of that is contingent upon the fact that they can get a casino. I mean, I don't think that if they, I don't think that if they weren't given the opportunity to open a casino, they would be behaving in the same way. Maybe I'm wrong. I just don't know that they would even have the wherewithal. And sure, it's based on those sorts of financial considerations. But all that being said, their posture at the IRB meeting couldn't have been more different than Arlington's. They are doing all the things that you would love, or at least saying they're doing, or maybe Arlington is doing more than they said. But from the testimony that we heard, Hawthorne's position is the one that you would have loved to see Arlington inhabit, in that they have, like, they're on top of it all the time. They're in these deep discussions with all the authorities. They have all their protocols in place. They're acting like a track that wants to have horse racing as soon as possible, and even without spectators, even, you know, at, you know, some financial peril. And sure, they have something that they're working toward that will benefit them that's not racing in the casino, but still, they're doing that, and I don't want to pretend like there won't be racing in Chicago if there's not an Arlington, because there is another entity
right.
that, from all appearances, seems committed to doing that.
Very much, and you know, despite some teetering of its own, going back a little bit, and
definitely,
you know. Marcus, before we go, you mentioned Canterbury firming up their date. We had talked to Andrew Offerman a few weeks ago, and they were set to open the backstretch, and now they've got a June 10th to September meet in place.
Yeah, that just has to be, I mean, it seems like a fait accompli that the Minnesota Racing Commission is going to approve that. I believe that meeting is June 8th. I think that's what it was, with the meet to begin shortly thereafter. And, that's going to be welcome for a lot of people, Turf Paradise people, Will Rogers people, Tampa people, although Tampa just keeps going and going. But I know there's a pretty large set of horses that have been waiting for Canterbury to go. And same with Indiana. Indiana is right around the corner. And those both places, well, I know Indiana's overnight purse structure looks pretty good. This is Eric Hallstrom's first year there, as whatever his title is, but he has got a long history in the sport. And hopefully both of those places will have useful meets for a lot of people that need places to race.
Well, and Eric said that 1,100 stalls filled and applications for 2,000 horses.
Oh, wow. Well, there's a big field across the street. Maybe they could put up tents.
Pop some tents. Marcus, the big day of racing, and it's been a good weekend. They keep adding venues, and of course, New York now less than 2 weeks away. And
very exciting.
Yeah, things are picking up, and not in Chicagoland necessarily, but most. In most jurisdictions. Marcus, I appreciate this because I felt it was important that people hear, you know, where things are.
Well, I'm not saying I'm happy to do it because it's not a happy thing, but I am happy to be able to provide at least some information.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody, DRF Hirsch, and Marcus, of course, with international coverage as well as fairgrounds and Chicago area and game plan and you name it. Marcus, one of the linchpins, pulling, keeping the train on the tracks at DRF, and especially online. Marcus, thanks.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me, Steve. Take care.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody. Let's take a quick break. We've got a visit coming with Michael McCarthy. Nick Tamaro, follow quickly and get into the card today, the pick five. Later, Graham Motion, Doug O'Neill, Brendan Walsh, and your surprise Breeders' Cup visit. Peter Rotundo Jr. Peter's apparently he's motoring around somewhere upstate. So who knows where he's going to come from? He could be at Saratoga. I don't know. We'll see. He just got a text. He said, I'm driving around upstate. So we'll see where Peter is. Let's take a time out and come back with Michael McCarthy and talk about Smooth Like Straight and also catch up on his other state courses like CC. See what the plan is for that one, considering the depth of the Distaff division continues to burgeon. Dunbar Road, of course, the latest addition. And she's a Julie. She didn't get out of the gate well and was on her heels immediately. She needs to be in the race flow to be successful. And you could see right away she was on her back foot. She didn't go well. But she'll right the ship quickly. So every week we're seeing another top level filly and mare division. And there's still a couple out there. It's going to be good. Michael McCarthy after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRFSports.